Welcome to Behind the Story, a program where we take you straight to the source. In this special episode, we travel to Night Vale, the strange fictional town made wildly popular by the Welcome to Night Vale podcast and now book. Its creators Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner stopped by Waco last night for a book signing and Q&A with KWBU's Jim McKeown. But before we hear that discussion, we'll hear Jim's original review of the Welcome to Night Vale book.
I'm Jim McKeown. Welcome to Likely Stories, a weekly review of fiction, nonfiction, poetry, and biographies. In my rich, interesting, and varied reading life, I've made friends with numerous strange and weird novels. From Joyce's Ulysses to Mark Z. Danilewski's House of Leaves, the story of a house larger on the inside than on the outside, my mind has been bent, my logic challenged, and my thought processes twisted beyond understanding. However, a new novel by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner has topped them all for sheer bewilderment. Welcome to Night Vale stemmed from a podcast posted by the authors and presented as a radio show for the fictional town of Night Vale, which reported on the strange events that occur there. The series was created in 2012. Cecil Gershwin Palmer is the host, main character, and narrator of the novel. The podcast typically airs on the 1st and 15th of every month and consists of news, announcements, and advertisements from the desert town, located somewhere in the southwestern U.S. In an interview with NPR, Joseph Fink said that he, quote, came up with this idea of a town in that desert where all conspiracy theories were real, and we would just go from there with that understood. The novel is part suspense, part mystery, mostly comedic, and all mind-bending. To give a taste of the novel, I will offer a few short passages, none of which will give away any of the plot, but all will reveal details of the story. That's my version of a typical line by the authors. Buckle up, here we go. Clocks and calendars don't work in Night Vale. Time itself doesn't work. There was always some world-ending cataclysm threatening Night Vale. Feral dogs, a sentient glowing cloud with the ability to control minds, although the glow cloud has become less threatening since its election to the local school board. Most mind-bending of all is this description of Jackie Farrow, a perpetual 19-year-old woman who ran a pawn shop. The authors wrote, "She understood the world and her place in it. She understood nothing. The world and her place in it were nothing, and she understood that." Jackie meets a mysterious man she does not recognize and decides she will make a list of everyone who might know about him. She pulled out a promotional pen from a festival put on by the city a few years ago, the Night Vale Shakespeare in a Pit Festival. "Fall into the bard's words," it said. The broken leg had been painful, but she did love that pen. Jackie visits old woman Josie to find out if she knows anything about her missing son Josh. Fink and Craner write, "She turned. There was a being that was difficult to describe, although the best and most illegal description was angel. Angels are tall, genderless beings who are all named Erica. Of course, they do not exist. I was just doing some trimming," the being said. "They were holding hedge trimmers and standing by an empty patch of dirt. There were no plants of any kind anywhere near them." I could go on like this for way more time than I have or don't have or wish I didn't have or have, but this fun and breezy read will offer many hours of humor, suspense, tears, joy, and mystery. Adults are forbidden to read it. In fact, everyone should read it. Let me be the first to give you a hearty Welcome to Night Vale by Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner. 5 stars. Likely Stories is a production of KWBU. I'm Jim McKeown. You can read my book blog at rabbitreader.blogspot.com. Join me again next time for Likely Stories, and happy reading.
And now we'll hear a Q&A session with the creators of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast.
I want to also welcome you coming out on a rainy night like this. Waco is really weird. We go months with no rain, and then it rains every day. So anyway, but thanks for coming out. This is a really nice event. I love these kind of book events myself, and I'm really, really happy to introduce to you the authors of Welcome to Night Vale and the podcast. And right here is Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner.
Hi, guys. Hi there. Thanks for coming out, y'all.
Okay. I'd like to start with a question about the kind of a mixture between podcasts and books. And as you know, books have been around for centuries, and traditionally there would be an oral story and then a written copy and then taping, but you've gone from the latest delivery system, a podcast, back to print. So what I'd like to know is what made you decide to make that move?
Yeah, I mean, so back in July of 2013, our show had, you know, it had been out for about a year and had been building steadily, and then we just had this sudden explosion of popularity. You know, we went from a few, you know, maybe 10,000 downloads a month to that summer we had over 10 million. And so we just suddenly found ourselves with popular internet thing. And when you have popular internet thing, people start emailing you being like, how can I make money off your popular internet thing? You get a lot of those emails. And, you know, from everyone. But the thing that really interested us was the publishers, because we both really love writing. We love books. We really wanted to write a book. And so that was kind of the thing we latched on to. So we started developing the idea for a novel back in the kind of late summer, early fall of 2013. Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up kind of oral storytelling, because that's really where we see Night Vale coming out of. To us, we were thinking less about like radio serials. That really wasn't the basis for the show, so much as we really love just single-person storytellers. Mm-hmm. We come out of the downtown New York theater scene, and people in the downtown New York theater scene don't have money because they're making theater in New York City. And so there's a lot of, I don't have money for props or costumes or sets, so I'm just going to stand here and I'm going to tell you a story. And that can be so absolutely gripping. And so I think we really wanted to recreate that in audio form of just a single person with no frills just telling you a story and trying to see how interesting we could make that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I read that you've actually had over 100 million downloads. That's an incredible number.
Yeah, we just hit that number this
month.
Yeah,
this fall, yeah.
How's that affected your life? That's a tremendous success.
Hugely.
hugely.
I'm in
tremendous.
Waco. So.
Yeah, we're in Waco. Hi, guys. And it was a huge change for us. Like that summer of 2013, as we started realizing the popularity of the show, we both still had our full time day jobs as we started seeing people like posting on the internet about Night Vale and about us and about Cecil and things like that. And it was a very strange feeling of like still sitting at my desk job, like doing Excel spreadsheets and things like that, and being like, oh, this is this whole big world. And it wasn't until, for me anyway, it wasn't until we booked our first tour in January of 14 that I finally quit my job, knowing that this was going to become a regular thing of traveling and doing these shows, and that it was a sustainable full-time job to do a touring live show, and then eventually to do the book, and you know, with the podcast, things like donations and merchandise help a lot too. Yeah,
I take it you don't miss the spreadsheets.
I honestly kind of do sometimes. Like they're really great. I loved my job. I did. I would not trade it back for that job, though.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. While we're talking about the podcast, taken as a whole, they're sort of stories that weave in and out of the narrative, and with really little connection, as you'd have in the novel. And I'm wondering, did you have any special problems in controlling the narrative of the podcast? I've listened to about half of them, and I've kind of noticed that
in the podcast or the novel.
In the podcast.
No, I mean, in the podcast, you know, we do a lot of, Jeffrey and I have been writing together for over 5 years, and so we just have developed a very comfortable system that works, that involves a lot of, we don't write together, we go off kind of on our own and write, and we sort of alternate episodes, although that's more or less, we sometimes switch orders around, but we generally alternate episodes, and then we pass stuff back and forth and edit each other's work. So there's a lot of just very casual discussion in order to figure out where we're going next. Because it's only two of us, we don't need to have like a show Bible, and we don't have like a writer's room or anything. It's, you know, we'll sit down with a beer and be like, so I had this idea for something that could happen in 3 months. And then mm-hmm. we'll kind of start figuring that out. We tend to... especially like we'll go through periods where we're just kind of each writing on our own and just seeing what we come up with, and then we'll start picking out things that seem to be happening, and we'll sit down and get a little more detailed and be like, okay, here's how I see this playing out over the next 6 or 7 months, so that we can, because if you just winged it the entire time, that would be terrible in terms of pacing and storytelling. So at a certain point, once you've kind of developed some material, you have to sit down and be like, where are we going with this?
Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of horror stories about collaborative writing. You don't seem to have had any of those.
No, we've managed to do really well in the years we've been writing together, and I don't know if I could say, like, here's the secret to that or whatever, but I think it's just very early on we just clicked, right? Like, just some relationships, you just like, oh, I know this is my new friend or whatever. I know this is my writing partner now. We just felt very comfortable from the get-go in the way that we work together. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with, we don't take a point of view of trying to get, like, I don't know. I don't think we feel super self-important about the ideas that we bring to it. I think we know that we have longevity here in an ongoing podcast, that the ideas that we have, we can get to them. And sometimes, you know, there's always room to, like, let somebody else in and let the other person in. And, like, we figure out, like, instead of saying, like, let's just take turns with our ideas, let's see how we make them work together. And so we've never been super precious about those things. And we just... the back and forth has been very, like, all positive energy. We work to take that kind of that yes and principle, like, yes, I like this and I want to add this, or that type of thing. So it's worked really, really well so far. It's a really great system.
Mm-hmm. Good. How about the reaction from fans of the podcast to the novel? Have you had much feedback on that?
I mean, some, like, the novel just came out, and then pretty much since it's been out, we've been out doing this. So we've met a lot of you. You all seem very nice. A lot of people, I don't think, have read it yet, or, you know, now that we're getting later in the tour, I suppose. How many here have started reading it, like, in a, like, past chapter one, let's say? All right.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's starting to become, you know, early on in the tour, most people hadn't read it yet. You know, we don't do a lot of, like, digging through Amazon reviews or Goodreads reviews. It just seems a rabbit hole that would be particularly terrible one to go down. Because either you're going to see a bunch of people complimenting you, which never seems like a healthy thing to go seek out, or it's going to be a bunch of people criticizing you, which also is not a particularly healthy thing to seek out. So I just don't see a winning situation in trying to find those. But
yeah.
We got a really nice review from NPR that, like, once that review came out, I'm like, nothing can touch me. That's the nicest thing that anyone's ever said about me.
I'm intrigued by the weather music in the podcast. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, when we started the show... the original idea, like, there was kind of going around about having all of these different reports, like a weather report would be music and a traffic report might be poetry or some other thing, or you might have a short other piece here and there. But eventually just the weather was the thing that stuck, was it just made the most sense to have this one thing each episode. And it was great because it's a song, and we have this very kind of elaborate algorithm by which we choose our songs, which is, do I like this song? Yes. And that goes into the podcast. We had Joseph opened up submissions. Was it last year?
It was last August for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't even put it on the podcast. We just on our Twitter and Facebook made a mention. It got a few thousand submissions in those 2 weeks. And then I listened to all of them myself.
Wow.
It took me over a year to do. So a lot of the weather songs from the last year or so have been from that. Not all of them. There's still been, I kind of reserve the right to, when I hear a song I like from someone, just email them and be like, hey, let me tell you what a podcast is, and then can I put it on a podcast? We've also for me it was a really amazing experience of premiering songs from artists we've worked with, like the Mountain Goats. Has anyone here listened to the Mountain Goats?
Nice,
yes.
Nice.
Some of you need to work on that. the Mountain Goats is one of my absolute favorite artists, and then we kind of have started to work with him and become somewhat friends with him, and so we got the chance to premiere a brand new song by him on the weather, and that was really extraordinary experience. And we did the same thing for our friends in Doomtree, which is a rap collective from Minneapolis who we've worked with a member of theirs, Dessa, quite a bit. And so it's been nice doing that, doing some like, it's a role that fiction, as a fiction writer, you don't normally get to do, of premiering a song mm-hmm. by a new artist. You don't get to do that a lot in like novels.
Yeah. Are you going to continue with the podcast?
Yeah, I mean, we have no intention of stopping the podcast. We love making it. We love doing it. We love writing together. And it's fun. The podcast is great, and it's this ongoing story that we want to keep telling. I mean, we definitely want to keep doing other things, too. We have, we've already agreed with the publisher, has agreed to publish a second Night Vale novel, so we started that. We probably won't work on it until we get back home next week. But
we have not done a great deal of writing on the road.
No, but no. So yeah, and continuing to write novels, like as long as people want to print Night Vale novels, we will continue to write them for them. And I think as long as we still have everyone involved to do the podcast, we want to keep doing it just because it's a great amount of fun, and it's this really great world we live in. By the way, that you have. Especially with podcasts blowing up, there's so many good podcasts out there, and it's really amazing that there is all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of free entertainment available online by some of the most talented, amazing people in the entire world. So we just love continuing to be part of that.
Joseph, in another interview, I checked some of those out, and I noted that your choice of a superpower was to own a dog. That seems like an odd choice, maybe, but it fits the oddities of Night Vale nicely, I think. So what would you and as a pooch do with this newfound ability?
Yeah, so I'm 29, about to turn 30, and it was around about when I was 28 that I came to the sudden realization, I've been a legal adult for 10 years, and I don't own a dog. And that's a really terrible realization to find out about yourself, that you've gone 10 years as a legal adult without owning a dog, and now it's been another year and almost 2 years, and I still don't own a dog. I love dogs.
When you live in New York City, it's almost impossible to have a dog.
I've never had an apartment that even allows pets.
Yeah.
And also, we're on the road 6 months out of the year, so there's that. But yeah, I'm about to move out to the country a bit, kind of up the river a bit from New York. And first on the list of things that me and my wife want to do is buy a dog. So I think I will achieve that superpower this year mm-hmm. is sort of the goal.
One word of advice, Labrador.
I grew up with a Labrador pit bull mix, and she was very nice. I mean, I think we're just going to go to the pound and just find just like a nice mix of something.
That's good. Yes.
Just like a medium normal brown one, you know?
one of the things I enjoyed, secondary things I enjoyed reading about Night Vale was the contributions, I guess it's sort of fan fiction, of authors and reviewers to the style and incidents of your readers. One person described, quote, a viscous substance when they tried to read the book, and another developed, quote, a crack in a Kindle and all the titles replaced with no. how do you react to those things? I mean, I think they're wonderful, but how do you like them?
We love that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a world in which, like, especially with like fan fiction and fan art and things like that, it's a world we don't really get involved in at all, right? It's a thing that, because like fan fiction is so wonderful because it's writing by fans and for fans to like expand upon like a canonical universe, you know what I mean? In a way that like, oh, they, you know, outside of whether we're talking about like something giant like the Avengers or something smaller like Welcome to Night Vale or whatever, it's just like, we all know this universe, we're all big fans of this universe, let's add to it, let's make other things. And I don't know, I really love that. We don't ever really get bogged down on looking at too much of it, only because, and I use the phrase bogged down because we don't, want other people's ideas layered into our head, because like those are their ideas from their experiences and they own those, and I would like to not have those in my head. I would like to continue making the thing with the ideas that I have and Joseph has. But no, when we see it, when people present us with like at all these signings we've gone to, people have brought us these amazing like notes and letters and given us drawings of things and paintings, and it's really lovely. Like it's a really, really high honor. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about the future? What do you see in the future for Night Vale?
Well, we're gonna keep writing the show. Mm-hmm. There's that. We're gonna keep touring the live show. You know, the live show has become a big part of what we do. We have at this point, as of last week, we've done 150 live shows in the last 2 years. In 11 countries, mm-hmm. And we're about to add a 12th and 13th because we're going to go to New Zealand and Australia this February.
Wow.
So we're going to, you know, it's sort of developed into its own thing that is related to, but kind of a separate thing from the podcast. We write the live shows differently than we write the podcast. They're designed to be an experience that even if you don't know what Night Vale is, you can walk in and have a really fun time. And we really enjoy doing that. We've developed this whole touring party. They're off doing the live show in Denver tonight without us. Like, that's become its own thing. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to start, we're doing the second Night Vale book at some point when we're not traveling so much that we've done six time zone changes in the last 2 weeks. So some point when that's not happening, we'll write that. Mm-hmm. And then we're really excited. We're going to, in 2016, we're going to start launching some new podcasts that are not Night Vale related, because we really love podcasting. We really think podcasting is an important thing, and it's a medium we really enjoy working in. And we kind of want to go back to our roots of just trying something that seems interesting and seeing what other people think of it. So we have one podcast that like exists, like there's episodes of it that are there. And that'll probably be launching sometime early in the year. And then we have other stuff that we're working on that will hopefully be launching a little later in the year. But we're excited to kind of try some more, see what we can keep doing with podcasting.
I think that's kind of an interesting outgrowth of starting with the internet. You've sort of created this audience, and now you just have to feed them.
It's interesting. Like we almost never thought about it from that point of view. The podcasting way was, there's such a low financial barrier to entry in podcasting. We did the show with a $60 USB mic when we started it. We've since upgraded, of course, to a $100 USB mic. But there's this thing where like hosting and is relatively inexpensive and putting it up there, and it's coming out of theater, it's so expensive to make a show. Like I've gone in the red for so many years in filing. I've gotten a lot of great tax refunds because I go into so much negative, I go into so many expenses when we make theater. My wife and I do make dance shows and things like that, and it's costly. And podcasting is this great world where it is easy to share, and it's easy to share around. It's free. It's all online and not expensive to produce. But yeah, this idea of like, we're trying to keep with the spirit of, especially when starting these new podcasts, of like, staying with, these are things I really want to make. This is a story I really feel is important for me to tell. And I don't know, it would be really hard to say that the new podcast we make would be as successful as Night Vale, because very few things will be. It was a huge success. It really blew up, and could never reverse engineer how we did that. And I think our goal in mind is really to like continue working together and continue working with the people we found as writers and put it out there. And if it, you know, listen, if it makes a live show, a live touring show, and gets a book made and all that kind of stuff, great. Or if it just has, you know, a fraction of the listeners and we're making a thing we really like, I think that'll be just as fun too. Yeah.
One question I like to ask writers is, do you have any advice for young writers, podcasts or, you know, or blogs or mm-hmm. short stories or anything at all?
Yeah. Every time I give this advice, the person, like, because we often get that question from people who are like, I'm a young writer, can you give me advice? And they always look so disappointed when I say this. but I really don't know any other advice, which is just you have to do it. And you have to do it for a long time. You have to do it for years and be terrible at it. I mean, I did it for so many years when I was terrible at it, and then I did it for a long time when I was just kind of okay at it. I mean, writing is like anything else. It's like learning how to fly a plane or learning how to play violin. Like, it's a skill that you just have to, like, learn and then practice and do and put in the hours. And there's no sense delaying that, because there's never going to be a shortcut. So there's no point trying to wait for the right time or for the perfect story. You just have to start doing it and then keep doing it. And at the same time, you know, read a lot, because if you're not seeing what other people are doing, then you're going to kind of keep hitting these little cul-de-sacs or going up these little things. But you have to read, and you have to read a lot of different kinds of things. Try and read out, you know, if you find that you've been reading the same types of books, try and read something different. Because you never know, like, I've had books that I just bought because they were half off and they had a cool cover. And they completely blew my mind and changed how I wrote forever, because I just was like, oh, I have to learn how to do what this person is doing. I have no idea what it is they're doing, so I'm just going to start trying and see if I can figure it out. That's pretty much all I have.
And the thing I always add to it is the way I've found in my life that to make that process of writing all the time and easier is to find people to work with to collaborate on things. One of the great things about a podcast is it is, you know, it's hard to just be a one-person operation. You do need to work with other people, whether you're, it's like two comedians sitting in a microphone telling jokes, or whether or not it's a fully scripted fiction podcast, or whether or not it's a nonfiction and journalistic style radio show. But working with other people is one of the greatest things in the world, because you get deadlines and you have tasks. You have a thing that is due. You have a thing you need to get done, and it keeps you accountable. You have some accountability partner there to be like, to make sure you're on time. I can't tell you the number of times I've worked on something by myself saying, like, you know what, I'm going to write. I have a poem I want to work on, and I have an idea for it. And that's something I'll do this weekend. And then over the course of the weekend, I'm like, oh, this college football game is really good. I can't stop watching it or whatever. And you just find distractions. But when you have somebody else involved, like, I have part of me, and I think most people here have this as well, it's really hard letting other people down. And so having a collaborator is a really good idea. It may not be your favorite thing in the world and might not be a thing you want to stick to, but especially for needing to write all the time, finding a writer's group or finding somebody you really like whose work you like and working with them is great.
Have you written and published anything outside of Night Vale?
Yeah, I mean, not kind of since Night Vale started. Well, that's not true. I did a poem for the website The Toast, which is a very, very funny website if no one reads it, but probably some of you read it. It's getting quite popular, which is really awesome. So that I did that just because I wanted to have something published on The Toast, and so I was very excited about that. We did before Night Vale, we did a play together. That's kind of how we started writing together. Jeffrey and I became friends soon after I moved to New York. We did not go over this, did we, the whole New York Neo-Futurist?
We have not, no.
Okay. So Jeffrey's a member of a theater company called the New York Neo-Futurist that Cecil is also a member of. A lot of the people involved in Night Vale are members of this company. And when I was first moved to New York, I didn't know anyone. I just stumbled on this company, and I started seeing them a lot, and kind of my entire social circle built out of that. And soon after that, we became friends. Jeffrey approached me with the idea of writing a play about time travel. Which we did, and we performed it in 2011 in the East Village, as you do. That was sort of the start of that. I also, back before Night Vale, I put together a couple books, because I suddenly, when I moved to New York, suddenly knew all these really good writers I had just met, and I wanted to do something with that. And so I started just giving them questions or challenges, and then collecting their responses and just putting them together into books myself, which I laid out and edited in, the first one I put together, it was in a free program designed for designing greeting cards at home. And I put together like a 300 something page book in it, and I do not recommend ever doing that. it is not optimized for that use. If you make any change anywhere, suddenly you have to just manually go back and change all 300 pages that came before it. I don't recommend it. But yeah, we did. We did, and then Jeffrey got involved in both of those books as well.
Yeah.
So you first did a play about time travel in 2009, and then 2002, yeah. And then 19.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It just keeps going back further and further.
Well, that's the questions that I have. Do you think we should take some questions from the audience?
Yeah, should we do a quick reading of the...
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that first.
Let's do that, and then we'll go to questions. All right. Hi, I'm going to read a part of this book for you. I'm not going to read the whole book to you. Maybe I will, I don't know. Shoot me an email. Okay, this is... big setup here, so you know what's happening. This is chapter 2. There's this house. It's not unlike many other houses. Imagine what a house looks like. It is also quite unlike many other houses. Imagine this house again. Given that it is simultaneously not unlike and unlike other houses, it is exactly like all houses. One way it is not unlike other houses is its shape. It has a house-like shape. That's definitely a house, people might say, if shown a picture of it. One way it is unlike other houses is also its shape. It has a subtly unnatural shape. That's definitely a house, but there's something else, something beautiful inside that house, people might say, if shown a picture of it. I don't know if beautiful is the right word. It's more like, it's actually upsetting me now. Please stop showing me that picture. Please, those same people might beg a few moments later. It is a terrible, terrible beauty that I do not understand. Please stop. Okay, the person showing the people the picture might reply, because that person might be good and caring. It is hard to say who is good and caring when you know nothing about a person except that they show other people pictures of houses. But there's no sense in going through life presuming awful things about people you do not know. It would be safe to assume that the house is an enclosed structure owned and built by people. It would be weird to assume that the house has a personality, a soul. Why would anyone assume that? It is true, it does. But that was weird to assume that. Never assume that kind of thing. Another way it is unlike other houses is its thoughts. Most houses do not think. This house has thoughts. Those thoughts are not visible in a picture nor in person, but they find their way into the world. Through dreams, mostly. While a person sleeps, the house might suddenly have a thought. Taupe is not an emotional catalyst. It's practical and bland. No one cries at any shade of taupe. Or another thought like, OMG, time. What is time even? And the sleeping person might experience that thought too. These thoughts may also be shared in the shower. Grumpy thoughts, angry thoughts, thoughts that should be unthought before interacting with the public. Thoughts like, or, knuckles crack, fists clench, teeth tighten, eyes stop letting in any new information, and water runs down a rigid face. The thoughts are everywhere. Sometimes they are quite literal, utilitarian. There's a rodent chewing on some drywall behind the headboard. Could be one such thought. Another way it is not unlike other houses is that it houses people. It houses a woman, for instance. Imagine a woman. Good work. It also houses a boy, not quite a man. He's 15. You know how it is. Imagine a 15-year-old boy. Nope. That was not right at all. Try again. No. No. Okay, stop. He is tall. He's skinny with short hair and long teeth that he deliberately hides when he smiles. He smiles more than he thinks he does. Imagine a 15-year-old boy. No, again, no, not close. He has fingers that move like they have no bones. He has eyes that move like he has no patience. He has a tongue that changes shape every day. He has a face that changes shape every day. He has a skeletal structure and coloring and hair that change every day. He seems different than you remember. He is always unlike he was before. Imagine. Good, that's actually pretty good. His name is Josh Creighton. Her name is Diane Creighton. She is Josh's mother. She sees herself in Josh. Josh looks like a lot of things. He changes his physical form constantly. In this way, he is unlike most boys his age. He thinks he is several things at once, many of them contradictory. In this way, he is like most boys his age. Sometimes Josh takes the form of a curve-billed thrasher or a kangaroo or a Victorian-era wardrobe. Sometimes he amalgamates his looks, fish head with ivory tusks and monarch wings. "You've changed so much since I last saw you," people often say to him. People say that to all teenagers, but they mean it more with Josh. Josh doesn't remember how he looked the last time each person saw him. Like most teenagers, he always was what he happened to be in that moment until he never was that. There was a girl Josh liked who only liked Josh when he was bipedal. Josh does not like always being bipedal and found this news disappointing. There was a boy Josh liked who liked Josh when he was a cute animal. Now, Josh always likes being a cute animal, but Josh's subjective sense of the word cute was different than the boy's. This was another disappointment for Josh, and also for the boy, who did not find giant centipedes cute at all. Thank you.
Does anybody by any chance have any questions for... I saw that hand first.
Hi.
Oh, okay, I can stay over here. All right. I won't go near the line. First, I want to thank you guys for your podcast. I really love it. I've like re-binged something it over the past month, and I've enjoyed it even more the second time around. My question for you is, if you guys had to live through one of Night Vale's many disasters, which would it be? And also, all hail the glow cloud.
I would love to have a puppy infestation in my home.
I mean, you specified that we were going to live through it, so that does make it easier.
Yeah.
But yeah, puppy infestation sounds great.
It sounds awesome. That'd be fine if the house comes crumbling down.
They're tough to get out of the walls.
They are tough to get out of the walls, there, yeah. But super adorable.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Hey there.
Hi.
I would like to thank you for your podcast as well. It's just fantastic, and
thanks.
It's encouraged me to write a lot. My question for you is, where did Night Vale come from? Was it like a shower thought, or, you know?
I don't know. I mean, like the question of where ideas come from often seems like a good question for like a neurologist. Because I really, like, they probably have studied that a bit. I honestly just don't know. Like, at this point, I don't even remember. It came pretty fully formed, I know that. Like, Night Vale as a name came so fully formed that I thought I had stolen it from something. And I spent a few days Googling, and as far as I can tell, no one else had used that name. But it was so sudden and felt so right that I was absolutely sure I had stolen that name from somewhere. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I've always loved conspiracy theories since I was a kid. I don't believe them, but I love them as stories. I think they're fascinating. I used to, like, get books on conspiracy theories out of the library and just read them. I've wanted to, for years, do something with conspiracy theories, so this seemed a good excuse to do that. And then I thought back to a drive I had taken from Ventura County, where I grew up in California, to Las Vegas. And I just remembered the desert there. And I'd always heard that drive was very empty, but actually the desert there was very beautiful. Like, there was so much to see. And so I think those two things kind of came together. I always think about that drive when I think about the desert of Night Vale.
Thanks.
Thank you. I really like the podcast. It's really wonderful.
Thanks.
I love all the songs you guys do before the weather. My question is, where did the idea for the Whispering Forest come from? I mean, the Whispering Forest could have been something really dark. Instead, it's like, "You have nice hair. Come closer so I may see it more."
I think same thing here about, it's hard to tell where ideas come from, because that was an episode that I had written. I think for me, a lot of times what will happen is writing weird jokes on Twitter, either on the Night Vale account or mine or something. Sometimes it's just like a weird idea just spark. Like, the faceless old woman who secretly lives in your home came from, because I think Joseph was the first to make a joke about it on Twitter.
Yeah, she was just like,
I think it was
on Twitter.
Joke.
Yeah, it was just like a little joke about, I don't even remember. She was the punchline. The punchline was that there was a faceless old woman in your house.
Yeah. And I just loved that phrase, and I kept making jokes about it too, and then eventually just wrote that episode, and it was a lot of fun to write, like a scary, creepy episode. And but yeah, Whispering Forest was, I don't know, like I've always loved that character of the Whispering Forest, and I don't know, it's kind of a nice combination of like cute and dangerous, which I think is where a lot of really great things lie in that Venn diagram overlap. And so, I don't know. It was, I think also there's this part too of like the allure of, I don't know, now I'm just being psychoanalytical. You could be sit there breaking it down like, oh, it's about peer pressure. I don't know. I don't know what it's about. I just wrote it. It seemed cute that a forest would whisper at you and then you become a tree. Yeah.
Nice.
And that's how forests work. Thank you.
Thank you guys for making this podcast. It's been a part of me and my brother's life since high school.
Awesome.
Thanks, y'all. One question I wanted to ask for you is, do you ever see Night Vale or maybe even a book later on becoming another form of media, like a film or TV series?
Yeah, I mean, as we said, you know, when you have popular internet thing, you get emails from all sorts of things. We got emails from TV and movies. We also got emails from, like, board games. Just everyone's like, how do I make money off this thing you have? you know, I think a couple things. One is Night Vale belongs to us. We've been very careful to keep it independent. Obviously, we did the book through Harper, and Harper Perennial has been wonderful, and they really... We talked to a lot of publishers, and no one was as on board with what we wanted to do as Harper. They really understood. They really got what we were doing and wanted to do it, too, and that was cool. But yeah, with the thing about writing a book is we already know how to write, and we know how to write in Night Vale. And so it was a pretty easy jump to be like, we know we can do this. We can do this ourselves, and we could make sure it's something that is worthwhile for people to experience, which is an important thing for us. We don't want to put something out under the Night Vale name. That's just crap, you know? Like, we want it to be something that we know is good. And the thing about TV and movies is we don't know how to do those. You know, we've never worked in television or movies. So we're not, like, opposed to it. It's just that it's been very slow. We've been doing a lot of, like, explain this to me again. Great, I'll think about it.
Yeah. And finding the people you want to work with and that you, because you have to find a person, multiple people, that you're like, I can trust you to write this thing. Because in TV, you need a showrunner, you need a head writer, you need those things, and that's a whole different set of people that are not the two of us. It's a slow process to find those people.
Yeah, so I would say that is definitely not something we're against. No. I just wouldn't, I'm not going to be able to announce a release date of anything, because nothing exists at the moment.
Well, next time we're in LA, we're definitely going to go over to like some studio and be like, introduce us to your best writer. That's it. That's what we'll do.
Hi.
Hi.
You did an episode where we hear from Kevin. Cecil hears from Kevin, but it's Kevin from the past. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if we're going to hear any more from past Kevin and if that's going to intertwine with the current canon.
Are you asking for spoilers right now?
Yes, I am.
We, in terms of stuff about the show, like stuff that, will this happen later? Or can you explain what happened in this other previous episode? We always say our stuck answer is basically like, either I can't tell you or I won't tell you. Because either we deliberately have scheduled things in the future because we want you to have them later, or we've deliberately made things ambiguous so that, you know, or hidden some information because we don't want you to have it yet. Or we legitimately have no idea. So it's one of those two, can't or won't, yeah.
Okay, hi.
Hi.
I've been into Night Vale since right after you guys got done with year one.
Awesome.
And I actually just finished the book last night.
Right? Oh, wow.
So
thank you.
It was fantastic, by the way.
Thanks.
It took me longer because usually I can read a book in a couple days, but I had to like keep stopping to like absorb what I'm understanding. But anyways, my question is, I know at the beginning of the series, you guys start out as like a narrative. I was wondering like what exactly made you guys decide to make like Cecil more of a, like an integrated part of the town? Like, does it make sense?
Yeah, I mean, so at the start, we didn't really know what Nightfall was at the start. There's a lot of feeling it out and trying to figure out what we were doing. We knew right from the start that that we needed to have continuity. We knew kind of in our very first meeting where we sat down to talk about it, we were like, we can go as weird as we want. We can do anything we want in the show as long as it has continuity. Because then things matter and they build on each other. And a world kind of builds itself without you even having to do much of anything at all, because it just sort of builds up that way. We don't direct Cecil, the actor, at all. We send him scripts. He sends us back recordings. We, you know, occasionally we'll be like, it should be in this accent. But we don't, like, give him notes. I've made him re-record 3 times, and each time it was because he just got a word wrong, that, like, he just misread it. And so there's this certain amount of collaboration that comes out of that, because he makes his own acting choices, and he decides how he's going to read something, and that informs the character, because the emotion that he's giving a line, whether he's deciding to play it funny, or whether he's playing it scary, or whether he's playing it kind of emotional and honest, that tells you what kind of person that character is. And so we sort of work from that and write in response to the acting choices he makes, and it becomes this sort of feedback loop of he's acting in response to what we're writing, and we're writing in response to his acting. And it's sort of inevitable that you're going to build a personality that way, so that this, what started out as just a narrator, is going to start becoming more of a person. And then as a writer, once that person exists, you want to know what they're doing, and so you start writing stories for them. So yeah, I think it kind of just came organically out of that process.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm not as serious as all the other questions, but I'm the mother of the purple hair girl that was supposed to ask the question for me. Is Koshak dead? The cat.
Is Koshak dead?
She told me that he died.
No.
No.
No,
that's,
he's
my
not
favorite
dead.
Part
no.
is to hear about the cat.
Koshak's okay.
Mm-hmm. But is he a floating demon?
This happens to be the mother of a student of mine, and I can see the resemblance in the family there. And hear it too. See, I think we had a question over here.
Hey, was there anyone that identified themselves as a fan that you were just completely surprised by?
Oh, like a person that we knew or
Yeah, like a media notable or something. Yeah. You were like, that is so weird, I don't get it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So we did. You guys know Hank and John Green, right? You guys, and they do. So Hank established this new conference called, or convention called, NerdCon. And it was in Minneapolis this October, and we went to that, and it was really cool. And so there's just a bunch of like really cool people into like story nerds running around, and all these other like writers and creators and stuff giving talks, and it was really fun. And Kate Jones, who is a friend of ours, who's one of the Night Vale cast members, she plays Dark Owl Records owner Michelle Wynn. Kate Jones was in town for that as well, and kind of between sessions, she was in line at like the little coffee place, and she was just standing in line, and there was a woman, and there's just a giant line because people are all cramming to get their coffee in before the next sessions, and the woman in front of her was wearing a business suit and said, "What is going on here?" And people were explaining what NerdCon was, and she goes, "Oh, okay, great." And Kate said, "Yeah, I'm with one of the groups here." And she's like, "Oh, what's your group?" She said, "Welcome to Night Vale." And the woman said, "Oh my God, I love Welcome to Night Vale. I love it so much." And Kate was like, "Oh, I'm on this show. I play Michelle Wynn." And she was like, "Oh, I love you so much." And she was like, and then the woman said, "I'm the mayor." And it was the mayor of Minneapolis. Just waiting in line to get coffee.
We got her business card, and it said her name, and then it said mayor.
And it just said mayor. That was her job title. It was amazing. And then she tweeted about us later that day, and it was awesome. It was
mayor
one of the
Minneapolis.
It was super exciting. Yeah.
Okay, I think we have time for a couple more questions.
Great.
Where'd you get King City from?
Well, I got King City from King City, which is a real place in California. It's in Monterey County, California. It's not the prettiest town, but it's on its way to pretty places. So, you know, as a kid growing up in Southern California, we used to drive up to Northern California every year to go camping. It was kind of a regular vacation we took. And King City is a really good place to stop and pee when you're doing that. There's a Taco Bell right off the highway. And so it just became a regular place where we would take a bathroom break on the way up. And it's kind of stuck in my head as just a place that is in between places. It's a place that you stop on your way to somewhere else. And so when I was thinking about the city in this book, King City seemed to fit that as an in-between place.
Okay.
So, plot twist, I actually don't have a question. Uh-oh. I want to give the mic to this redhead girl who looks like she has a really big question and isn't raising her hand high enough.
Okay.
And I raised my hand high enough for her.
So you're, can you so give helpful. That to her?
Thanks.
I'd like to answer that question.
Hi.
Hi. First off, I would like to say I really do appreciate your podcast. Oddly enough, it gives me a feeling of normalcy in my life. As a fan of Night Vale, who's friends with other fans of Night Vale, I've realized that there's many different purposes and why they love Night Vale, why they listen to it. And I was wondering, like, what's your reaction? Because I know some people have a very emotional connection to it. Some people just like it for the laughs. And sorry. Yeah,
no, it's great.
I'm bad at socializing. Sorry.
That's a great question. Our reaction to that is we love it. It's so amazing to see so many reactions. One of the earliest responses I remember hearing that took me a while to realize it was a compliment was people at our live shows would be like, I love your podcast so much it puts me to sleep. And we're like, okay, thanks. You could find a new way to word that. And but the meaning behind that was always that they found it comforting. And it was interesting because, you know, I have my own reactions to Night Vale as well as other things that are probably different than yours or anyone else's in here. We all have kind of our own thing. And I love that a podcast that a story in a world that is so like dystopian and terrible and can kill you at any moment in bizarre and horrific ways, that people find so much comfort in it. And I've thought a lot about it, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact of, like, I mean, our normal world is terrifying and strange and full of dark forces that could kill you or imprison you or do awful things to you, and there's a lot of things that can go wrong. But the thing about Night Vale is that you have a whole society of people living in a town where every conspiracy theory is true and they're fine with it. And I think when you watch other people be fine about something awful, it makes you feel more fine. You know, when I, Joseph and I are both nervous plane travelers. We don't love flying at all. And I remember on our first tour last January having to fly a bit. And I was not really excited about that. But I remember sitting next to Cecil on a couple of the flights, who does not care. Like, he's the most relaxed person about stuff like that. And sitting next to somebody who's so calm, you know, on the Europe tour last fall, I sat next to, you know, Mary Epworth, who's super fun loving and calm as well. And when you sit next to somebody who's doing okay in a bad situation, it makes you feel better. And I feel like that's a lot of what people have gotten out. And I've really appreciated learning that from people and spending time thinking about that. There's a lot more in your question, but I think that's kind of a general way of addressing it.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay. I want to thank you for coming.
Thank you, Jim.
I especially enjoy the advice that you gave about young writers. Read and write, and then read some more, write some more, read, write. I give that to my students all the time, so it was spot on. Thank you for that. But thank you very much for welcome to Night Vale, and we're glad that you're here. Welcome to Waco, and thank you all for coming.
Yeah,
okay.
That was KWBU's Jim McKeown moderating a discussion with Joseph Fink and Jeffrey Craner, creators of the Welcome to Night Vale podcast and book. This has been Behind the Story,